Welcome to Geeks On, a show created by geeks for geeks, covering topics that geeks like to talk about. This week, it's Geeks On, Raising a Geek. For more information about news and links we talk about in the show, go to our website at www.geekson.com. Hey!
Yes!
Hello, my geekrings!
Welcome, everybody.
Another episode of Geeks On.
Right. Hi, my name is Aaron Hendricks, and I'm a graphic designer and filmmaker here in Los Angeles, and I'm a geek.
I am Donald Marshall. I'm a video game developer and a writer here in Hollywood, California, and I, too, am a geek.
My name is Matt King. I'm an actor here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
My name is Pete Robinson, and I am a writer and director here in Los Angeles, and I am a geek.
And I am Deb Robinson. I am Pete's mom and the head of a geek family.
Mom in the house! Welcome. It's so nice to have you in studio.
Thank you.
In our lovely multi-million dollar geek studio.
That's right.
Yes.
How was everybody's geek week?
It was awesome.
I started Oblivion, finally.
Oh, congratulations to the...
Dear Lord.
The pain.
I'm a late adopter.
I thought I was the late adopter in the group.
Our friend Carolyn has also started, and she's like plowing through the game.
Do we know anyone who's actually finished the game yet?
No, that's not the point of the game.
I thought Lisa had, though.
Hell no.
No?
She's behind me.
Oh, my bad.
I saw Daywatch.
I did too.
You did?
I saw Daywatch.
Did you guys go together?
No.
You went all three individually.
I texted you.
I receive no text. I am not a 16-year-old girl.
He has not yet adopted that technology.
It's like sitting in a room of cavemen. They like literally have the technology of cavemen in here.
Did you text me? Because I didn't get a text.
I just got a ColecoVision.
Maybe
thank you very much.
Didn't go through for some reason because I didn't get
some
it.
Some people got it.
I would have called you back.
All right.
I also started playing BattleTech: The Crescent Hawks Inception, and it's bad ash.
Really?
Is this that old game?
It's that old game that used to be on the Amiga, and it's incredible. I'm highly excited about it.
So Daywatch is a sequel to Nightwatch.
Sorry.
Yeah, let's go back to Daywatch.
Daywatch is a sequel to Nightwatch, which we did a full episode on last year. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was amazing. It didn't quite grab me the way Nightwatch did.
Exactly.
And I have no idea where the sequel will go, but...
I wasn't super jazzed about Nightwatch, and I definitely wasn't jazzed about this. It looks awesome. The story is
a little messy.
That's to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to put it mildly, the story is all over the place.
Yeah, it's a sprawling mess.
What's the sequel going to be, like mid-afternoon watch?
I don't know, but
Twilight.
I don't
even
know why this is called Daywatch, quite frankly.
It didn't make any sense, no.
Well, I mean, it followed one character who was on the Daywatch.
Okay.
It barely followed her.
But aside from that, this was my big geek movie week. I also saw Devil's Backbone, which was a first for me.
That's a great movie.
I liked it. I actually liked it less than Pan's Labyrinth. But one thing I really admired about this guy's direction was that he's still able to set a very kind of... I guess the only way I can describe it is a delicate tone to the movie. It felt very fragile. Like everything could just come apart at a moment's notice, but nothing does. It just kind of holds itself together and tells a quiet, scary, spooky, eerie story.
That, and I think he has the best ghosts. He has absolutely the best ghosts. The ghost with the little floating blood.
Dude, that was awesome. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
I saw Shrek the Third.
As did I.
And,
I loved it.
Really? I thought Don would love it more than the other two.
I liked it better than the other two.
That's what I thought.
I absolutely did.
The character development is sad. Sad.
I liked it a lot.
I felt the character development was light because we'd already been there, done that.
They introduced the main hero who has this the moral challenge in here. Mm-hmm. You don't even get to know. Arthur.
I felt I knew him a little bit. I didn't feel I was especially attached to him. But what I loved about the movie was the plot felt a little bit more. There were underdogs again, and the underdogs weren't the people you expected them to be.
Yeah.
And there was more on the line than it had been in the past movies, plot-wise.
I went to Whole Foods yesterday, and I'm sitting there for lunch, and this huge squad of kids comes in, and they're all probably 14 to 16 years old. Bunch of different
young
races.
Young adults.
Tweens.
Okay.
And they were given these tiny little boxes, and they started eating, and they were all so glum about, you know, and they were like, I wish I was eating fries, and all glum. And then to change the subject, their head counselor calls up Shrek 3 and says, hey, what did you think about the movie? And these kids all instantly just come up from their lunches, and they start talking about Shrek 3. And I swear to God, everyone gave a better review of it and more concise, intellectual, intelligent, beautiful understandings of the kid. They were like, you know, one kid who was, you know, pizza-faced and down in his lunch was suddenly like, he said, the first film was the best film because it was dealing with Shrek as an ogre, as someone who was an ugly, nasty character, and his growth from being an ogre to actually, you know, understanding that other people were different and therefore he could be different. He said in these other movies they've become Disney movies. And he literally said they've become what Little Mermaid was to the original fairy tale.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I thought that was a really, I mean, and all the points they made were exactly like that.
You should have got them on Geeks On.
I should have got them on Geeks On.
I played some board games. I played Twilight Struggle. If anybody has out there has played Twilight Struggle, it's a war game, card-driven war game about the Cold War. Normally, the game is about 6 to 7 hours long. I played it with Eris, and I think we played for about an hour and a half, and I beat him. I played the Russians, and I just swarmed Europe, and he had no chance.
Thumbs up, thumbs down?
It's a great game, but you have to be into war games.
Okay.
Like hardcore war games.
I had one last geek movie to bring up.
Oh, you did?
I did send out an invitation to all of you, and none of you even responded. You were so disgusted.
I did, too.
I didn't get any response from you on that. I went to see Dead or Alive, the movie, which is now playing here in Los Angeles. And you know what? I don't know if it was the movie. I don't know if it was the crowd that happened to be in the theater that night.
Don't you dare.
It's your brain,
Don. It was amazing. We had so much fun. The movie's crappy. I'm not going to say it's a great movie.
This is a Don movie. Utter shit.
It's a movie that embraces its utter shitness.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it
and
good all
no,
the time.
But here's the other fun part. All right. You remember how every time I go see a martial arts movie, I'm like, I think there were martial arts going on, but I couldn't tell the way they were filming it.
Right.
Everything's just these stutter cam shots with quick cuts and blah, blah, blah. This one was a Paul Anderson movie, so they followed the same Mortal Kombat style of filming.
So everything's in a wide shot.
Everything's in a wide shot. I could watch what everyone was doing. And Jamie Presley from My Name is Ed is one of the lead women.
Huh? My name is Earl.
My name is Earl, excuse me. I don't watch the show.
She's kind of the hot, trashy one.
She plays Tina. She's the wrestler fighter. They made her look like she could fight.
Well, maybe she can.
Her look like a real hard body. I have no idea. I have no idea if she can or not.
She is a real hard body.
Oh, I mean, like bodybuilder? She's a bodybuilder.
Not like bodybuilder, but she has...
She's in shape.
She's very much in shape.
All right, well, this one, not only was she in shape, but she was muscled, like well-toned and muscled.
She just gave birth, so maybe she just used this.
Well, I don't think so, because this movie was filmed like a year ago.
Oh, okay, you know? So yeah.
But I got to say, with the right crowd on a big screen, if you're in the mood, this is the way to go. Go. Be ready to hoot
smoke
and holler.
Some weed.
Make fun of the movie. Embrace its badness. It is TNA martial arts action with no redeeming qualities. Go. Enjoy.
Geeks On does not advocate smoking weed.
For this, we do. I strongly suggest smoking weed.
Tell me, come on, no one else here appreciates the bad movie.
I do. 13-year-old boys movie.
It is a 15-year-old boys movie.
I
totally.
13.
15.
Okay.
I wouldn't let a 13-year-old watch this.
No, but it's probably a 13-year-old boys.
It's a college frat boy movie, you know? It's.
All right, so shall we do a little geek news?
All righty.
Cue the music.
Ouch.
right, what's your geek news?
Hit it, Petey.
Okay, so YouTube is going to host a presidential debate. They're going to host the Democratic candidates on July 23rd at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. Second, but similar debate for the Republican candidates will take place in Florida on September 17th. The debates will feature 20 to 30 questions culled from people who put their own video questions into YouTube.
Nice.
And they're going to just pick them, and we won't know how they're picking them, but they're going to pick a couple. They're going to play them for them, and the candidates will have no idea what their questions are going to be until they get them.
Yeah, wow. Right.
And then they're going to put it all on YouTube, and I think that's it. I'm excited about this.
Barack Obama is a noob. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
It's going to be some stupid question like that.
Well, we'll see. Your turn.
Have you seen that? They're not going to randomly pick questions.
Have you seen how much Hillary Clinton, like, she's on my complete shit list right now. She just released this video onto the internet that basically says, here, come into HillaryClinton.com and tell me how you feel about, you know, the climate crisis and how you feel mm-hmm. about the war and how, and we're going to poll your answers and da 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 da. And I was like, so you basically want me to tell you how you should vote, like, so you can change? Because she's been waffling back and forth and back and forth on it.
Well, maybe
Matt,
she's
Matt, are you actually offended that a representative of the people should be asking the people how the people would like their representative to vote?
No, I'm because she's been going back and forth because she initially voted for the war.
Because people supported the war.
Right. There no, because it would have been political doom at that point to not support the war.
All right, let's go move past that part. Otherwise, we'll be here all
to
night.
To
what? We don't want to talk about whether Hillary Clinton voted or didn't vote for a damn war for the next half hour.
Right. To now
condemning
it.
I just think it's the responsibility of the representatives to ask the people what they should be doing.
Well, Matt, I strongly feel that once someone makes up their mind, they should stick to it dogmatically, no matter what is right or wrong.
Absolutely. Really, stay the course. That, you know, don't change horses in mid-fire.
Change Absolutely. The horse.
You know, I mean,
don't cut and run, Matt. Don't cut and run.
Don't cut and run.
Don't say that with a missing tooth.
All three of you.
Somehow I think this conversation's hitting the editing room floor.
We love Matt.
How will YouTube give us this content in one big giant chunk, or is it going to? I mean, I assume it's going to be aired on YouTube.
You know, I it doesn't say, so we'll have to wait and find out.
Cool, love it.
All right, so a dying woman wants to donate her kidney in a Dutch TV contest.
Ugh.
And the government refuses to block the show. They're actually going to allow it to go. A 37-year-old woman suffering from an inoperable brain tumor wants to donate a kidney before she dies and will choose the recipient from among three contestants on Dutch national television. And she's claiming she wants to highlight a crisis in organ donations, and she wants to basically do this one thing, big thing before the end of her life. And a lot of people are like, what are you, crazy?
I'm fine with the government not getting into all this, but I would hope that the people vote and this becomes a financial disaster for the company who decides that this is a good idea.
Can you imagine the title of the show?
The Big Donor Show.
Oh.
Oh,
I like my title better. Who wants to be a spleen owner? Oh, come on. Come on. I'd watch it.
Okay, can we put some crickets in there?
Oh, yeah, I'll put them
I'm
in
just
there.
Picturing a whole bunch of people with, like, little spleens, foam spleens on their hands watching the TV set.
Yeah.
So,
how about you wouldn't buy a foam spleen. All right.
How about, so you think you can produce bile?
So bad.
Come on.
Yeah. I feel the ratings dropping right now.
So viewers will be able to vote for a candidate via SMS text message, but the final determination will be Lisa's. That's the name of the – not our Lisa.
The donor.
Just the donor. and there's no guarantee that Lisa's choice will actually receive the organ.
So,
which is – what's the freaking point?
Well, part of the thing is that they have to make sure the organ doesn't have any cancer.
Right.
So
yeah.
So she's the – who's the a-hole on American Idol?
Simon Cowell.
She's the Simon Cowell of the spleen.
Yes. I'm sorry.
Kidney.
This is crap. Yeah. Oh, kidney. Oh, it's a kidney. Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Those kidneys are absolutely dreadful. They just won't do.
All right, Don.
All right. Let's see. So I actually have a news article here about a lawyer who has brought up a very interesting lawsuit that he believes that should be pushed right now. Anyone who doubts that the copyright regime as we know it is dead should read a short article about the President Bush's Father's Day that appeared in the Miami Herald June 18th, written by the Associated Press writer. Here's the money quote. President Bush's twin daughters gave him a CD they had made for him to listen to while exercising. Let me unpack that statement. Let's assume 12 songs copied from 12 different CDs. We'll assume for the purpose of argument that there's no problem with the original recordings being registered, make statutory damages unavailable for registered works, or not being marked correctly. This mix CD isn't a compilation being copied. It's only one being created, so the last sentence of 17 U.S.C. 504 C1 2006 doesn't apply. The copyright rights holder may get damages for each song copied. And he goes on in a long string of legalese. And apparently this Father's Day present from Bush's twin daughters, if prosecuted, should cost them $1,800,000 in statutory damages.
I think the RIAA should go after them.
That's what he is saying. He is a lawyer. He has sent letters to the RIAA complaining in the strongest possible terms and hoping that he will continue to press charges against the Bush twins.
Yeah, I mean, if the RIAA has balls enough to go after a little old lady who downloads something and puts her in jail, have the balls to go after the Bush twins.
It's publicly noted in major newspapers across the United States what their present was. So let's see if they're really the law and order president that he claims to be. So, just saying. We have a link. Go to our website.
Quick news. Fox has finally stepped up and snagged the licensing rights to the Halo film. So, as you know, the Halo film was in hiatus because they had some problems with the production and getting a distributor. And Fox is stepping up. So, I don't know what the deal was. If they get to keep their director that they wanted and the script that they wanted or what. But that's the news so far.
Interesting.
Okay. According to NBC Universal General Counsel Rick Cotton, society wastes entirely too much money policing crimes like burglary, fraud, and bank robbing when what it should be going after is piracy. Our law enforcement resources are seriously misaligned, Cotton said. If you add up all the various kinds of property crimes in this country, everything from theft to fraud to burglary, bank robbing, all of it, it costs the country $16 billion a year. But intellectual property crime runs to hundreds of billions of dollars a year. So, obviously, two problems with this. It really doesn't run up to hundreds of billions of dollars a year, even with their inflated estimates. For example,
and a guy is not breaking into your home with a gun.
Yeah.
Second objection, of course. traditional crimes that he says, don't cost us enough money also kill people sometimes. So,
I think I'd be more traumatized if someone broke into my apartment and took my TV set than if somebody republished an episode of Geeks On. I'm just saying. You know.
Well, yeah,
maybe. You think that now?
I think it might be hard to prove to a judge that an episode of Geeks On is even worth the price of your television.
Did he mention China at all? Because they're the biggest ones who are caught infringing.
Well, the article doesn't mention China, so I don't know.
That's where the hundreds of millions
probably
are being
lost.
Probably
domestic.
Yeah. All right, Matt.
All right. Well, I didn't see it coming. I thought it would be great, but there are mixed reviews for the Lord of the Rings musical.
Oh. What?
Yes.
Mm.
So, such a shame. Lord of the Rings musical, the most expensive production in West End history, opened to mixed reviews, with some critics praising it as brilliant and others calling it corny and a quote-unquote thumping great flop. The stage adaptation of J.R.R. Tolkien's fantasy saga officially opened Tuesday night at London's Theatre Royale with actors dressed as hobbits, elves, and dwarves, pyrotechnics, special effects, and a revolving stage aimed at recreating Middle Earth. All I could think of was cats. Or Les Mis. The $25 million show based on Tolkien's literal trilogy about a hobbit named Frodo and his quest to rid Middle-earth of evil has been trimmed and reworked since its Toronto premiere, which also earned mixed reviews. So here are some of the reviews, which I loved. The Toronto Star renamed it Board of the Rings. Variety called it a saga of short people burdened by power jewelry. The Times called director Matthew Warchus's West End production a wonder and a brave, stirring, epic piece of popular theater.
Yeah, who said that?
The Times, the London Times, or maybe it's the New York Times. They just call it the Times. Yeah. So basically, a lot of people are
praising the guy who played Gandalf, and they're also praising the guy who played Sauron. They're saying that Sauron is charismatic and creepy.
But has hell of a voice.
And has a hell of a voice, basically. They're using the headline Flawed of the Rings. The Sun said the show's melodies were tune-free and the lyrics were swamped by the massive band. It's overblown, over-orchestrated, and now over here. So there are a bunch of wonderful, wonderful, wonderful bashing reviews of it, but you should check it out.
I've got to see this show.
So Spider-Man is our only hope.
My precious.
No, there's
my
still the Batman precious, musical coming.
I must have my precious.
Run, poor Frodo, run.
You're
run from Saul, run.
Frodo, away.
How lovely to be a hobbit.
I still love
where there's a whip. There's a way.
Yeah, they've already
where
done
there's
a musical.
A whip. There's a way.
All right, Don.
All right. Okay. I am bringing a news article that we have done many, many times, but it keeps rearing its ugly head again.
Yay!
So it must be brought. A Berkeley watchdog organization that tracks military spending said it uncovered a strange U.S. military proposal to create a hormone bomb that could purportedly turn enemy soldiers into homosexuals and make them more interested in sex than fighting.
Peter, Paul, and Mary, you are fabulous.
Nice.
If you all could see my mother's face right now, her jaw just dropped so hard it bounced off her chest.
I actually had a significantly lamer article, but I switched to this one because you were here.
So the H-bomb is now a homo bomb?
It is, in fact. There is
What's the blast radius on the homo bomb?
Pentagon officials on Friday confirmed to CBS that military leaders had considered and then subsequently rejected building the so-called gay bomb. So it was considered the gay bomb.
It's the gay bomb.
This article is... and when it lands, it actually drops a disco ball and techno music, too. You know?
And a big mirror.
Just sprays the area with ecstasy, you know? The article
Someone
is
hilarious.
Someone already
dropped a bomb in Hollywood.
I, for sake of time, I won't go on to quote the gay and lesbian community leaders they went on to ask about their feelings about a gay bomb. But go read the article. It's really funny, and
what happens,
it's true.
What happens if you're already gay?
Ooh.
Ooh.
Uber gay.
Well, according to Senator Rick Santorum, man's best friend is your next target, so.
Okay, I have two real quick ones. Spore has been delayed indefinitely.
Oh!
You've heard it.
Why indefinitely?
The first report was that Spore was delayed until next year, and now the report is it is delayed indefinitely. I repeat, Spore, which could have been the best video game of all time, has been delayed.
Time.
Indefinitely. And the other thing is Rotten Tomatoes had a top 100 science fiction movies of all time.
Ooh.
We've seen these. Every month someone publishes one
I
of
know.
These.
But Rotten Tomatoes has
and
street cred.
You know what? This was pretty ridiculous in my opinion. Some of them were okay. I did give you I brought the top 10, which I'll read to you.
Now, are you angry because it didn't agree with you?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Number 10, Aliens.
Okay.
Good. Seems fine.
Worst?
No, this is the top 10.
Best,
yeah.
Oh.
9, Star Wars, A New Hope. 8, The Host. Now, I haven't seen The Host, so I'm not going to...
It doesn't belong on the top 10.
Okay.
But, I mean, by any stretch of the imagination.
7, Children of Men. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
I can
yeah.
see maybe it fitting around there. Number 6, Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Above Star Wars? Okay.
I would have gone higher.
Number 5, Minority Report.
I'm sorry.
I am sorry, but that is lame.
Boo
number
on the Queen
4,
of Garbage.
Alien. Number 3, Metropolis. Number 2, Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind.
No. I like it, but no.
You know, I'm not...
I could see it in the top 10, but not that close to number 1.
And number 1, E.T. Now, again, this top 10 doesn't absolutely spin me out... Completely.
Yes, it does, because Blade Runner isn't in it.
Well, okay. That's just wrong.
But I think they come up with their stuff based on reviews.
No, I don't know if this one was actually done that way.
Because I thought that's how they have been doing it.
But I've decided that I'm going to come up with my top 100 science fictions of all time, my picks. I'm going to post them later on. I need to watch a couple. So if anybody, I'm going to take all the
maybe
ones.
Maybe all four of us should do that, not consult with each other at all.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be fun. I'm going
to
put...
I have a lot to catch up on.
Well, I'm going to... All the ones that are on their list, I'm going to use as possibilities. I've got a couple that didn't make it the list. And if anybody's out there who wants to submit something that I should consider, email me at aaron@geekson.com.
You're doomed. The deluge of your mailbox.
I'm not
going to
watch
begun.
Every single one of them, but if a lot of people suggest one, I'm going to go and check it out.
I'm submitting DOA.
I'm submitting this stuff.
Oh.
Dietetic yogurt gone bad that goes out and eats people.
Zardoz wasn't even on the damn list.
The stuff?
You've never seen the stuff?
Dietetic yogurt that goes out
like
and eats people?
Yeah, it's like a new low-fat yogurt that all of a sudden becomes sentient and starts eating people. It's like the blob but cold.
They could rename it Atkins 2.
Oh, God. Hey, I have one more quick one also.
All right.
There's this new idea by a scientist that basically is to put farms in high-rise office buildings. And the concept is, I'm going to pass this around, but imagine a huge 30-story building with glass walls topped off with a huge solar panel. Inside, they'll grow crops with a sophisticated system. It's basically a huge greenhouse.
Like a hydroponics.
It's an arcology.
Yeah. And it means there would be no shipping costs and no pollution caused with moving produce around the country. Year-round crop production in a controlled environment. All produce would be organic, so there would be no exposure to wild parasites or bugs.
Can we build down?
Elimination of environmentally damaging agricultural runoff, because it's all indoors.
Solar panel.
Food being produced locally where it's consumed, and all the water in the complex would be continually recycled, so you wouldn't have to worry about, like, water. It'd be very water-friendly. So.
My aunt in New York is actually involved in a project like that. But it's nothing that complicated. They literally...
Keep her pot hydroponics.
Corn.
Oh, okay.
Corn. Corn, thank you. Three-leafed corn. But literally, there are people in New York who are buying topsoil and putting it across the top of buildings and building gardens on top of their building. Nothing this complicated, but hydroponic systems are the next ones they're moving towards.
Hmm. Interesting. What's this?
I don't know. Something Peter gave me.
It's a picture of the tiered system of corn growing with scientists and lab
corn.
We'll put a link to that article with the photos on our website at www.
We'll still have to import our meat, however.
.geekson.com. Well, soon.
Put cows in there.
Yeah. Are we done with the news?
Yeah,
I think we are. Topic.
And we are back with my lovely mother, who's here to humiliate me with stories of my childhood.
Hello, Peter's mother.
Hello,
Peter. What is the topic today on Geeks On?
Is how to raise a geek child. The trials, tribulations, victories, you know, tactics.
Is it
we
how?
Have actually had a lot of geek parents writing in saying we need to do a geek parenting episode.
Really?
Yes.
We have.
The question is, have I finished raising a geek child?
Yes, I was going to ask that. Because,
well, we took over a little bit.
Yeah, you did. And you have done an amazing job.
We're in loco parentis.
I've got another one at home. Can I send him on to you?
I don't know.
Pick right up.
He's picked up some hobbies that aren't exactly help with time management.
I have noticed a little bit of twisted humor coming from him.
Well, that's
since he's joined
the That's my fault.
Yeah, because that's the dark one.
Yeah.
Hey, all this lightness is just concealing the real, true darkness.
You think so? It's always been there. It's not just, it's just coming out because of the company in which he finds himself now.
Maybe, actually.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Good. Yeah. I sent a perfectly nice young man up here, and you're destroying him.
Yes.
But all now, right. Rumor has it that Peter may have actually inherited some of his geekisms.
He did. Unfortunately, he comes from a fully fledged geek family.
All right, so we're give us the little geek. Intro on the geek family. What's the whole geek family about?
Well, you know, I asked my husband about a month ago. We've been married 34 years.
Congratulations.
Yes. Why he married me. And he said, because we could read together.
Oh, that's it, huh?
So you were literate, and that was enough.
Just barely literate.
So you're Southern.
Well,
there goes half our audience.
Hey, I haven't invaded the Southern block in
there
a long time.
There goes half our audience.
He liked the fact that we could just sit and relax and read books, me in one corner, him in the other, and, you know, all that night clubbing and dancing and fun that the other couples were doing, we weren't. So I think that was kind of boded well for what the future would be.
Right.
Because as the kids came along, we did that as a family. Everybody was sitting in different corners reading books.
I was wondering how the kids ever happened if you were in different corners.
Well, sometimes we got in the same corner.
It
really
books.
Depended the book which we were reading at the time.
Hey, you're reading Lady Chatterley's? Yes. What's going on?
Sometimes there's this very tall magazine with busty women inside it. My husband's book. You know? He's trying to look literate in the front, but you know.
Pete's begun to blush.
Yes.
So I asked my mom about this question also, and I said, so we're going to do an episode about raising a geek, and you know, have some questions. She goes, well, I didn't raise a geek. I didn't know that you were geeky. What are you talking about? So part of my
did your mom
wait, wait a second?
You know, I'll explain it later. I'll explain it later. But did you would if so, you know early on?
Wait a second. Your mom's a therapist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Denial.
No, I'll explain. I'll explain why she said that later. But
you know, I think every person thinks that they have this vision of this child they're going to create,
mm-hmm.
and the truth of the matter is, my opinion is that this person is almost intact when they're born.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his personality isn't any different than it was as just a brand new infant,
mm-hmm.
and that my job was to try and keep him alive until he got old enough to do it himself.
Right.
I didn't create him. He was who he was.
Right.
And the difference is, you when you're still learning that, mm-hmm. you're trying to create pathways, this vision of what you want their lives to be perfect because yours wasn't. So you want them to be the football star or the cheerleader or this or that or whatever, but that's your dream mm-hmm. that maybe you didn't fulfill in your life
mm-hmm.
and not theirs. So recognizing in your children's lives that your job is to help support their drive to find their dream, to find that
right.
avenue, the way to be successful and about their passions. That's the tough job.
Well, that is kind of what my mother said was, wait a minute, how is me supporting you being creative, being make you a geek, or, you know, how is that geeky?
Now, what made you a geek is that you're not part of the pack.
Right.
And when everybody else's foot is down, yours is up. And time after time after time, your intellect is so amazing that as a mother, you're just trying to keep up so you don't look like an idiot.
I'm going
to cry. Oh, no, it's not that sweet. You know? But it is. I mean, I can remember when they're little, they do everything first. So you're going, oh, I got this really great kid. You know, they walk first, they talk first, they're reading books first, they're doing everything first until they start preschool when the teacher says, your child doesn't color right. What do you mean my child
right?
doesn't color right? What are you talking about? He doesn't color inside the lines. I said, he's 4 years old. What do you mean he doesn't color inside the lines? And that's the beginning when you see the behavior patterns all lined up in a row
mm-hmm.
that all the normal kids do
mm-hmm.
and yours does not. When they're out on the Little League field and the mothers, these women are rabid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they want their kids to really be great. And the ball is hit mm-hmm. to the outfield where my son is looking at the ants in the grass, and the ball rolls right past his foot, and the mothers are going crazy, and he's perfectly happy that way because
he's
in the next game, when the ball rolls past him, he's looking at the clouds, you know. And mom, did you see the really cool picture in the clouds? You know, it's a whole different avenue. They just.
My mom said the same thing. Is like she said, you know, I recognize the things that you enjoyed. You enjoyed creating board games upstairs in your room alone, and you were super creative. You come down with all this stuff. I didn't pressure you into sports because I thought that's what you had to do. You seem to be creative in these certain ways,
yeah.
and I was supporting that. And to me, that's not geeky. That's just supporting my child being creative and having an individual path.
Your mom rocks too.
Yeah, she. Hey, his mom is brilliant. That you know, that's amazing.
So, do you think raising a geek is more about allowance than anything else? And I don't mean the payment system, but really.
I think you know raising a geeky child is it's exhilarating. It's exhausting. It's terrifying. It's heartwarming. It's heartbreaking because your intellect is so frequently so far beyond your social development. Hmm. And those hard lessons that come along with being a geek, because you still want to, I mean, my kids would, you know, be all involved in whatever it is they were doing, and then they come up for air and they want everybody to be around. Where is everyone? You know, well, everyone made plans. You weren't part of that because you were all involved in what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's you want your child to not have their heart broken, to be all involved in the fun things that they want to do. And when that doesn't happen, it's like you want to beat people up. You know, let them in. Let them have a good time. But, you know, the point is to not be necessarily a happy, successful kid, but a happy, successful, productive adult.
Right. Is there any time where you felt like you needed to shake Pete or any of your other family out of being the geek for a little bit and say, hey, I know you think what you're doing is important
I'll give you a perfect example. We'll be sitting having a dinner party, and my husband would slide out of his chair to go get on the computer. And I'd go, Or in the early days, he would just get up, excuse himself, and not come back because he went to bed. We'd have three or four couples over for a dinner party. So let me tell you, my kids come by this naturally.
What?
Yes. And even, I mean, 3 years ago, we had 28 people for Thanksgiving dinner. And my husband's at the head of the table, and it's on the terrace. It's out on our porch. And right around the corner is a computer. And you saw him kind of do this. He's trying to slide sideways. I go, no, I don't think so. You know, so teaching them the basic social graces, even though they didn't get why, mm-hmm. helping them understand that even though you don't think this is important, mm-hmm. the vast majority of the world does, and you will be judged on this, and this may stop your ability to have great opportunities. Mm-hmm. You may not be able to go in and get this meeting because they may not think you're worthwhile because they can't understand you.
Right.
You know, I mean, those were the hardest things, I think, to teach my geeky family. I'm still working mm-hmm. on my husband. My kids have it pretty well down now.
So you're saying there's a balance. There's a balance between enabling their interests, but at the same time, you know, still teaching them how to fit into the world.
Exactly.
You can't be a social misfit and a loner to the point in which you can't interact with the people around you and right. move forward in your career, move forward with socially with friends and family and that type of thing.
Well, even in a basic relationship with all of you are either in some sort of permanent relationship and recognizing that it's not just all about you. And a lot of geeky kids...
Wait.
Oh, no, it isn't, Aaron, I promise. That's hard. That's hard for young people who are so off the charts bright to open up and recognize that this isn't just a tunnel that's all about me, that it has to be about the other person, too. Mm-hmm. And there has to be give and take. And that's hard sometimes to think outside that box mm-hmm. and say... I mean, some people are naturally giving and open.
Right.
And but a lot of times, I haven't seen a whole lot of geeky people that are. Most generally, they're so involved in their brain power and all the imagination and all the things that are going. That's a hard thing, mm-hmm. that giving part.
Now, I also have read some studies suggest that children who grow up in unhappy homes and even abusive homes escape to a creative alternate worlds in their minds.
So how often did you beat Peter?
Did I beat him? Yeah.
What Aaron's asking.
Well, you know, I think that's true. My home life was not that happy.
Mm-hmm.
And my father used to say that frequently because I read prodigiously.
Mm-hmm.
I went through every book in the whole school library mm-hmm. and almost every book in the town library. Well, no, it's a little town. I mean, my boyfriend named his prize cow after me, so it's not that big a town.
Right.
But
is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, our eyes were the same color.
Oh,
you know, it was his prize milker.
Oh, my God.
So, However, so for me, and he would always say, well, this is not good. You're escaping from reality. Which mm-hmm. so, and in
oh,
some
I
ways.
I heard that so often growing
that
up.
That was the case. Mm-hmm. But in our family, I mean, we have one of those kind of rare situations where my husband is, I mean, we're like best friends. Mm-hmm. We let the outside world in occasionally, but we have so much fun together. Mm-hmm. We have worked together for 34 years. We've raised
wow.
two kids. He calls me at least six times a day and says, what are you doing? I'm working. What are you doing? Oh, I'm working. I'm just checking on you. Okay. I think he thinks someone's going to steal me.
Right.
But so
that's where Pete gets yeah. that from. God.
In fact, my younger son, Joseph, came home. He was maybe 18. And he said, you know, you have not prepared us for the real world. I said, I haven't. Well, what have I messed up today? Because it's frequently everything. You know, all of our friends parents are divorced. And you have raised us in this Pollyanna kind of lifestyle. And we really don't know how to function in the real world because you're too happy. I said, you know. Gee, I don't know. Everybody in Florida is hot and happy. What can I say?
Right. My dad once said when I think I was talking to him about why my parents, because they've been together for 25 years at that point in time. And he said, at a certain point, it's not just about loving the other person because there are days when you hate them or
oh, yeah.
you're angry with them
yeah.
or whatever.
Sure.
He said, it's also about making a commitment to the relationship, to something
oh, yeah.
bigger than yourself and understanding that children, in a way, even though they're smaller than you, are bigger than you. You know, that they represent something larger than you and what you're bringing to the next generation.
Well, I think that people have a responsibility. If you decide to have a child, then you have a responsibility to subrogate your own needs and desires to that of that child until they're able to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In my family, my husband always came first, and then my kids came. Because my kids are going to grow up. We're going to together try and raise fairly healthy individuals, but we're going to be together for the rest of our lives. So I don't think it's healthy to put a marriage on the warming burner while you deal with more important things today.
So you're going to pass these messes off to us later
yeah,
on?
Well,
great.
Hey, you helped create these. That's one anyway.
You know, it's interesting because we're talking about, like, you know, problems with childhood sometimes causing people to be geeks. When I was young, I had some problems with dyslexia as a learning disability.
Oh,
do you think
yeah,
that had anything awful. To do with maybe me separating from the world at all? From your perspective?
Yes. I mean, all four of us are dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
My kids are dyslexic and gifted. I'm just the dumb contractor in the family, but I'm dyslexic as well. And it portrays itself in various sundry ways. Peter had the worst difficulties because he had eye-hand motor coordination issues, fine motor coordination issues. He would spend sobbing at the breakfast bar. He would spend an hour trying to think of one sentence to use all 10 spelling words so he didn't have to write more because it was painful, literally mm-hmm. painful to try and hold a pencil. And he had total mirror writing, so to read it, you had to hold it up to a mirror.
Oh, really?
I
didn't know that.
He had the most difficult time learning to read. And then by the time he was in just bordering on sixth grade, he was reading at college level. He still didn't know his times tables, and he was almost in eighth grade.
I still don't know mine.
And they put him on a mini trampoline. He learned him in 45 minutes because it was a mapping issue. It helped his brain connect.
Jumping on a trampoline?
Yeah, absolutely.
To the cadence of
absolutely.
2 times 2 is 4. And
I never heard that.
He's a kinesthetic learner, so he's a
yeah.
touch
physical
learner.
In a lot of yeah. times.
We did that in high school. We yeah. taught times tables using beanbags.
Yeah. We would write out on, we'd get butcher paper, and we'd write the words out on that and put a piece of window screen over it.
Yeah.
And then he would trace it with his finger. So that tactile sensation helped map in his brain. Well, if you think about
never
learning disabilities, it's kind of like a fuse that burns out, and your electrician comes to wire around it. So but his brain, I mean, your brains are amazing instruments. They can learn to do all sorts of things. You've seen people with half their brain cut out
yeah.
mm-hmm. that, you know, learn to function quite normally.
Also, especially boys rather than girls, I believe it's gray matter to white matter. Gray matter associates movement.
Mm-hmm.
White matter is much more cognitive reasoning, connective thought.
Mm-hmm.
Women tend to have more white matter. Men tend to have more gray matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why boys tend to work better when they're walking. You know, they'll like think better. They'll be able to work through their problems better when they're on a walk.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
a lot of times dyslexic boys will be put through a lot more physical activities
right.
and it really helps them map.
Well, and they take all kids really are much more successful if you can get them to crawl for a much longer length of time. Parents always want their kids to walk because they could say, well, my child's walking at 8 months. But the truth of the matter is that left to right progression is one of the things that helps us learn to read, to think, higher level thinking skills and problem solving skills. And one of the issues with Pete's dyslexia is the divergent thought processes. And you probably see that with him.
No.
You'll be on,
I don't know what you're talking about.
You'll be on a subject and his brain will veer off and he'll make a statement that's relative to the subject, but not pertinent to the discussion.
Yes, completely dissociative.
But it makes sense to him,
I love it, too. No, and I don't find it an amusing thing. I genuinely love that because I find that you think about the world and about things in a very different way than I do. So when you were able to open it up and communicate how those thinking processes happened, it's a window to a completely different place.
Exactly.
I love that.
Don still loves me.
Yeah, that's right. When he went to Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire, we were there at a parent weekend. And this is early on.
Oh. Can I interject?
Sure.
I meant to specifically ask about Exeter because I had wondered whether or not being in an inclusive boys community, whether or not it
was co-ed.
Being in an inclusive community, whether or not it exacerbated any geeky issues or whether or not it
inclusive.
Here's the thing. When you have a child who is a totally different learner, you're looking for any avenue to help them be successful and happy. And to me, the happy was a big, big piece of that, you know. It doesn't do any good if you just – so many of those kids are so dark. They're so depressed. We went through all the avenues in the public sector, and he could have gotten special help at school. But it was really remedial for kids with very low IQs. And that was no way going to help him, was going to help the other kids either. And in those early days, learning disabilities, those kids for many generations have just been lumped in the back of the room as being stupid because they can learn, but they learn in a different way. And it's hard to a small child to say, you're different, without them thinking there's something wrong. And the teachers don't want – I remember in one of his teachers, I think maybe seventh grade, we went in and we talked to her and said, look, he's dyslexic. So you're going to see his handwriting is almost illegible. And she said, well, handwriting is something we grade on. I said, yes, I understand that, but he has a learning disability. So he's going to have to type if you want to be able to read what he says. Oh, but we grade on handwriting. I said, I understand that, but he has a learning disability, so he can't write.
If this person didn't have hands, would you still...
Well, that was the next thing. She said, but I'm sorry, dear. We grade on handwriting. I said, what would you do if he was blind? Well, then he would have a learning disability. You think?
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, getting away from a class with 35 kids and teachers who are seeing 245 students a day to a setting at the round table where there's never any more than 12 students and where it's interactive learning process. It's not rote memorization, regurgitation. It's that you're on the line here. You can't be the big shot and take over, but you also can't disappear. So we had hoped that the Harkness table would be a better setting for him. The learning situation was excellent for him. The social setting wasn't any better. I mean, you know, I think the childhood for Pete was something to survive, to be able to really fly as an adult in college setting. I mean, it was something he had to survive so that he had the tools to do what he wanted to do with his life.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. But when the very first year, he was in chemistry, and we went in as parents to kind of an open setting, and the teacher came up with an answer that was 666. Now, y'all aren't from the South, so you don't know what this means, but there is not a teacher in the entire South who would ever let an answer be 666 because that's the mark of the devil in the Bible. And so his immediate response is, oh, but that's satanic. These people thought he had lost his mind. I mean, that's his brain just follows its own natural path, and it is divergent, but it's also so amazingly creative that you just never know what's coming out next. It's
Nor do I.
No, it's true, he doesn't. Sometimes he looks at me startled, like, I don't know why I said that. But
when was the first time? I mean, because there's sort of two sides to this. And I'm going to have a hard time parsing through this. But it's basically geeks, I think, when we were very young, it was hard for us to find a community. It was hard for me to find other kids like me. And I think because of the internet, because of what's come along, it's become easier and easier to find a sort of geek community, other kids who are just like me. Do you think it's easier now?
And even
Do you think it would be easier now to raise a kid like Pete, or do you think it's just as hard?
I meet parents all the time, and I think that the hardest thing is that you don't pop out with a manual. So everything is learning from scratch. Now, every parent reads all these books, and they talk to people and they listen, but it's still, you know, on your first kid, you're learning. And the biggest issue is learning that you're not raising a child to fulfill your own dreams and the things that you lost. But you have to learn that. It's not something anybody can teach you. You have to kind of trial by error. So, no, I think my husband and I and a group of other people started an education foundation in our community because the kids were still learning rote memorization and regurgitation. Mm-hmm. They weren't teaching higher level thinking skills. There was absolutely no writing because the teachers were seeing 240 kids a day.
Yeah.
And let's face it, in the most basic of jobs, you've got to be able to use computers to run irrigation systems, to run cash registers. And this was in 1991. So computers were, it was before the internet. We had kind of a localized internet system in our own community, and we got involved in trying to create opportunities so that parents could learn. Because how do you teach your child something that you have not yourself been taught, or that mm-hmm. you don't know yourself? But the short answer to all this is that parents would come to me in droves, and with the same problems generationally, you know, how do I help my child be successful? How do I help my child fit in more? How do I know that what I'm doing is going to let them be successful, productive adult? And no, I don't think it's any easier to raise a geek today, because I think today you're almost more of an inward community. Hmm. Every person, as you grow up, you have your own set of experiences. So that was your high school years. That was your dating years. And you will find with your own children, they'll be totally different. And you're going to be saying, well, when I was in school, and your kids are going to be going, yeah, okay, well, that's nice, but that's not our experience. And just the difference between my kids and my nieces and nephews' children, and my sisters are older than I, so my nieces and nephews are in their 40s, their mid-40s. So their children are all the way up to 21 years old now. Mm-hmm. Their lives are just so different. It's an instant life. It's a me life. It's a clicker life. It's a computer life. Their whole experience is different.
They're also saying it's much more of a public life.
Well, it is, but
for the kids.
They're not, I don't see as much community involved in their lives as a whole. I don't see them involved in family activities as much. I don't see them involved in as much as in more traditional, let's sit down to dinner mm-hmm. and have supper. You know, people are a lot more mobile. It's just so much faster. It's a lot faster. I think people are still grasping on how to do a good job raising a child that's different.
I have a question. How do you, as a parent, when you see, you know, a child that's having a hard time fitting in and having their own heartbreaks, how do you as a parent deal with the pain that causes you, because there's not much you can do?
Oh, do you remember that rotten kid you had a roommate in Exeter? I used to have the most violent daydreams about physically hurting that kid.
There's always a kid who beat up your
he was
kid.
So mean.
And you
I mean,
kill him.
And when he graduated and he was going to go to college, I was thinking, you know what? I should call that college admission place and just tell them they don't want that rotten kid. I mean, it was, you just are so fiercely protective. It breaks your heart when someone hurts your children or.
This is college?
It was, well,
no,
he was
high school.
Graduating
oh, oh, oh.
high school
oh, oh,
and
yeah,
he was right. going to college, right, you yeah. know, but. It's. I think it hurts you, the sting of it, sometimes much longer than it does your children.
Wow.
Because you want to protect them.
Do you think the temptation was to slide into a position where you're protecting them or, like, physically guarding them to the point where you're withdrawing them? Or did you ever have that urge to try and force them to conform? Did you fight those urges at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We did a lot of that. I mean, because he has to live in this world. That's why, in spite of being dyslexic and having so many learning disabilities, there are lots of schools that are very nurturing, touchy-feely. But what happens when you get out of that? Mm-hmm. You know, you have to live in this world. You got to function with people. The wonderful people and the jerks of the world. You still got to be able to function. I mean, he had a teacher in sixth grade who was just a nightmare for him because she was a very strict Southern teacher, and there was only one way, and that was her way. And she was abusive verbally to him. She took him by the shoulders once and shook him and said, "You're not as smart as your mother thinks you are." Where did that come from? They assigned him some sort of a lesson where he had to write a report on a real-life historical person. And so he wrote it about the captain of the steamboat in Tom Huck.
Huck Finn.
Yeah, thank you. Now, the story is fiction, but it turns out that that person is actually was written about a real person, the storybook. And so she gave him a zero and said he didn't follow the directions. Well, Peter doesn't argue. He just went home and he got the book out of the library and he came in front of the whole class the next day and said, "See, ma'am, you were wrong," you know, and of course that's challenging her authority.
Yeah, right.
So what we did was there was two marvelous people who had masters in special education.
That's awesome, Pete.
It
by
was
the way.
So cool. He did that all his life. But they sat down with him and helped him learn how to change his behavior, so that she related to him differently. Mm-hmm. So that they taught him to come in, put his books down, sit at his table, fold his hands, look her in the eye, that he was prepared to learn from her, and he was respecting her as an authority figure. And it changed the whole thing. She did a total 180. And within, I don't know, maybe a month, there was, at least it was an environment, I didn't have to pull him out of class.
Wow.
So it was important for him to learn that he can't do anything about other people's behavior, but he can adjust his own so that he can be successful in any setting.
I was wondering if you had any hobbies, or your husband had any hobbies, that might contribute to a geek nature. Like, my father built model ships, collected stamps, and was an astronomer.
He's an early adapter geek.
That's like old school geek.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're collecting stamps, you're geek. Old school.
There's a lot
geek
to inherit. Like, my dad's a musical theater geek. I inherited that.
I'll pitch in here.
You go ahead.
We had computers really early.
Oh, that's true. We had to learn the first computers, personal computers. Mm-hmm. In fact, he used to do his spelling words. You know, you have to write them 10 times. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first to learn the copy command.
He was a cheater then.
You know, it was like...
It's not cheating. It's a shortcut.
Well, and we had Lotus Symphony, the spreadsheet, and I had not... No, my husband went to Dartmouth, so he had all this experience with computers. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go to college at all. So, I mean, I could not get my mind around this. I was telling Pete earlier, so I took a whole wall and pasted graph paper and then wrote the A to Z, A to Z, Z, A to Z, 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 and all the numbers, and then literally hand wrote the things on the wall as it would be in the computer, in the spreadsheet, so I could understand, so I could grasp where this lived in there. I mean, I'm a very literal person. I'm not the bright one. I get it very slowly, very linear. But we had computers, and I don't know. I don't think I have many hobbies. I liked to play tennis when I was young, and I liked to read. But
no geek hobbies like.
Well, you were pretty passionate about your fantasy literature when
I love reading. I love literature, but I started out in politics. I worked for a state senator, administrative assistant, and they were prepping my husband to run for state senate. We were. I hate to tell you, I don't want to tell you we're conservative Republicans, but we were. So. They put me in charge of his political campaign, and we ended up getting married instead, and then we moved to Vero Beach, and the family was involved in construction, and once I got involved working in construction, it just, you know, when you're building houses all day long in communities, I don't want to come home and build something. I want to sit in the air conditioning.
Right.
mindlessly staring at something that's, Pete will say, you want to go to the beach? No, I don't want to go to the beach.
In some ways, I want to disagree with something you said earlier, a couple steps back, which is that it's, probably the same difficulty in raising a geek as it always has been. I think in some ways it's I actually heard someone, a mother talking about her son saying, Mom, it's never been easier to be a geek,
Well,
and I think that that's because of the internet.
You may be right because also social structures are different in high schools today. They don't have that.
Well, they can be rougher and they can be easier.
Yeah, but I don't think the networking, the social life is quite as... I mean, when I was a girl, there was all this school spirit and it was all this football games and the wrestling matches and the basketball games and the girls would draw little pictures of the Indian on their cheek and wear...
Well, now your clique is worldwide. I mean, your clique can be in Australia.
Right, I think I understand what you're saying on one level. When I was a kid, two of my biggest geeky things were books and comics. And when I wanted a book or a comic, my parent took me to the bookstore. My mother took me to the comic store. There was a moment of togetherness when I participated in my geekiness. Mm-hmm. The internet removes that connection with the parent. Hmm. That's no longer there. You now go to the computer and go to your own geek world outside of the family structure, which they may only know if they look over your shoulder.
So I wonder if that's exacerbating the sort of social misfit that the geek is now, and it's actually going to make a problem worse.
Well,
because geeks tend to, do that avoidance thing. We tend to have, social issues.
Yeah, but, to play both sides, these days you can walk outside and say, yeah, I'm a geek, and not, even in school, I bet, and it's not like it used to be. Everyone plays video games. Everybody reads comic books. Comic-Con's one of the biggest cons.
But I bet you there's still something in that high school same connotations.
Okay, now that might be a social thing, but those interests don't send you down that path right off the bat. So you can be that way. You can even be a pretty cool guy and you can play board games.
Yeah.
You can do all that type of stuff. Now, you're right. Maybe... piled up on World of Warcraft day in and day out and not speaking to anybody for the last 4 months because you've been on the computer chatting makes you a little weirdo in school.
Yeah, was it here where we brought up the fact that there are kids nowadays who are bringing their parents to job interviews?
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah, I mean,
really?
Yeah, and it's the new generation of kids.
The helicopter parent syndrome.
Yeah. They're complete, but that's tuned out of reality.
Yeah, but that's parents raising pussies. has nothing to do with the geek. You need to get your shit together out there and kick your kid out the door and say, go to the damn job interview. If you fail, you get your ass back here and go out again.
Well, and that is, that the parents' urge is to protect the kid and to create an environment in which the kid can be successful. But the problem is that when you create a false sense of success because you're masterminding the situation, as soon as you step away, they're going to fail.
Right.
So the key is to help them find the avenue in which they will thrive and find success on their own.
Right.
So, I mean, if you take a kid who you have to hold their hand the whole way through high school to get their notebooks done and to pass the tests and do this and that and whatever, they're not going to do anything different when they go to college. And you're not going to go to college with them. And they're not going to do anything different when they go into the business community. That's not going to be a skill they're ever going to grasp until they learn the self-discipline.
But I think maybe a geek has a better chance of surviving that way than the Paris Hiltons, they're the ones taking their parents to.
But let's actually stop. Because
not a plural in that.
Yeah, I don't think that having money is something that automatically makes someone have the technology.
No, I don't mean money.
I mean
the people who feel like they're entitled to things.
You're talking about
entitlement. Geeks don't walk around their school going,
I actually don't know many
geeks
who feel a lot of entitlement.
What's that?
I don't know a lot of geeks that have
that's what
feeling
I mean.
Of entitlement.
Yeah. Unless they're on World of Warcraft.
Paris Hilton's, not money-wise, but the people who walk around who believe, who their parents have taught them, no, you deserve everything. You deserve to be popular because you're pretty, or you deserve to be popular because you've got money, or you deserve to be popular for whatever reason. And I think maybe a geek might even have a better chance of shaking that because,
they haven't been fitting in.
Well, I think that's why a lot of like the major CEOs in the world were, you know, they're type A personalities, but most of them are also geeks, you know?
Yeah. All right. So finally, the one thing I want to check in. The social aspect of being geek. When was the first time that you saw Pete with girls? Or was it, did you know the geek?
I think that would be in the hospital when I was next to the girls.
In what framework do you mean?
Dating and sort of the geeky, geek going through the dating years.
Yeah, did you get worried?
We lived in a really small town.
Did you ever worry that Pete was gay?
No, he was, I can't say this online, so I won't say why, but no, it was always very clear that he was very heterosexual. So
you found those magazines early, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Actually, I'm just going to pipe in here. There was this one time when I had some magazines hidden underneath the bed.
Yeah.
And I come home, and my mom is reaching under the bed. We also stored other things.
And you jump onto the bed. And we've all done that.
She's looking for stuff underneath the bed. Like you know, I don't know what she was looking for.
Well, because your brother had a bag of orange water in the closet that used to be carrots. If I didn't clean out the room, there's no telling what would evolve.
So I turn, at this point, terrified, and go running out of the house. At which point, she notices that I've run out of the house. So she starts looking more carefully.
Right.
She finds the magazines. I'm about halfway down the block when I hear, Peter!
Get your ass home, boy! Now, you know what? We had a little girl across the street who's become a dear friend of Pete's. And
Joy, who's been on the show.
Joy Brina, right. Who is just the most beautiful soul you ever want to meet. And she was everything.
She's not so bad on
the
outside
either. Bright. She was gorgeous. She was a cheerleader. She had a heart of gold. And Pete and his buddies.
She was the girl next door.
She moved in across the street, and he got as a gift a set of binoculars from all his buddies.
Right.
Because this girl was drop-dead gorgeous, but she would... She was so generous. She would open up, and all the cool girls were coming over, and she would let the geeky guys join.
I thought you were going to say she would open up her windows.
No, she wouldn't do that.
You're talking about the
binoculars.
She was
not that generous. But, yeah.
That's exactly where I thought we were going.
Lady.
I was like, wow.
Yeah, but there was this one little girl.
That's generous.
Now, should I tell the story about Tiffany? This just broke my heart. And in fact, even today, I was about a week ago, I was talking to someone who had been the teacher of this young woman, and he was saying something nice, and I found myself gritting my teeth and thinking, I don't like that girl. He was about, I know exactly how old you were, because we had the 13th birthday party for you over at the swimming pool, right?
I guess, yeah.
And he invited all the kids in his class. They had a great time, and this one little girl, Tiffany, was a beautiful girl with these big, long
curls. I thought you were
going
to say, that's Susie James. She did the same thing to me when I was 13.
Well, he invites her to a movie. And she says, okay, in those days you met there.
It took me like an hour to get up the courage to call and invite her.
Yeah. Sure. And she said, okay. So, they're too young to drive or anything. So they met there. So they go and they sit down. And Tiffany shows up with some of her girlfriends. So they're sitting there together watching the movie. And then Tiffany and the girls get up to go to the bathroom. And they left.
They never came back.
And he is sitting there.
It was Bull Durham.
Oh, he came home.
You got Jack for
Bull Durham?
You got Jack for Kevin Costner.
That's like a rated R movie. There's like good sex and everything in there.
Oh, well, we always believed that sex was healthy. I didn't like horror movies,
that,
but I didn't care about
first date.
You know,
teenager thing's a little odd.
Yeah. Sex fine.
Yeah,
people
and plus
their heads
I didn't know
off.
That
my dad took me to Porky's.
A lot of R-rated flicks just had a ugly word here or there and didn't have any really graphic sex. It might be a little gratuitous sex,
sex in the '80s was something else.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. It was like what your R-rated movies in the '80s were probably your PG movies today.
I don't know about that.
PG-13 maybe.
I'm with her on this one.
Ratings on some.
I'm with her on this one.
I mean, you would never have seen the things that you have on X and R-rated flicks would never have even made it onto the movies in the '80s. Hmm. It was just not that graphic. But getting back to that story, it broke his heart. He came home, and there was definite quiver to the lip. And it was like, what happened? What is up? And he tells me this story. Well, I remember I picked him up. I picked him up, and he got in, and his face just looked stricken, and I wanted
just before
to
she
kill
picked me
that
up,
girl.
Just before she picked me up, I'm like sitting here, and I come around the corner, and I bump into the girls. And they're like, and I'm like,
they're giggling.
Where did you guys go? And they're like, stricken. Oh, we just went out to go get some food. You know, bye, and went running off.
Nice.
And that's the thing, you know.
You didn't buy her a ticket, did you?
I don't remember.
She owes you $450
plus interest, baby. Yeah. Plus interest.
But you know what? She became a dentist.
Well,
I just think that's just.
She glorifies in pain of others.
I don't know. There's just something about dentistry and podiatry that I just think, ugh. I know my life is boring.
Mouth game. There's some type of mental thing going on.
The ass, feet, mouth game.
I'm just grateful there's no armpit doctor to throw in there.
Yeah. Well, that's your.
All right. Yeah. Well, do we have a bit?
We do have a bit. We do have a bit if you would like, but we should say thank you for it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're welcome.
I thought we were going to say thank you again, but okay.
All right, okay. Well,
you can say thank you twice.
We're going to say
thank you.
Amazing accolades, you know. All right. A pat on the back.
Are you guys ready for the bit?
We're ready for the bit.
All right, Pete, you have a
bit?
Okay. All right, so here is the bit. The bit is called 6 Degrees of Sci-Fi. That is to take someone from one sci-fi movie, program, TV, and associate them in 6 degrees or less with someone else in another sci-fi movie picture.
Are you going to give us the answers, or are you going to let people write in?
I'm going to let you try a couple, see how hard it is for you guys to figure them out.
Okay.
And
this,
if it's
is
impossible.
Unplanned and unscripted.
Unplanned, unscripted. And we'll see how good you are at them, and if not, we'll, you know, I'll post the answers.
Okay.
All right. So, the first one is R2-D2. To Carmen Ibanez, Denise Richards in Starship Troopers in 3 moves.
Okay. Ken Baker was in, he was in.
Can you do TV?
Or? Yeah, absolutely.
He was in Time Bandits, which starred, who's the guy who starred, where are we going again?
Denise Richards? To Denise Richards in Starship Troopers.
Which had...
Which Bond was in Starship... Wait. She was also in
Bond.
Yeah,
I'm doing the same thing.
So yeah. What Bond was she in?
Cleese. John Cleese was in Time Bandits. And John Cleese is in James Bond. And James Bond was in
I don't know if John Cleese was in that James Bond.
Yes, he was. But that is okay. A 3. There is another one with one cheat. The other possibility was R2-D2 to Achmina, B. Arthur, in the Star Wars special. Achmina to Rue McClanahan on The Golden Girls, and Rue to Denise Richards in Starship Troopers.
Okay.
Rue McClanahan was in Starship Troopers?
Yes, she was.
Who was Rue McClanahan in Starship Troopers?
She was the biology teacher.
Oh, for Pete's sake.
Yes.
Okay, what's the next
one? Okay, all right.
The Goblin King, David Bowie, to Jar Jar Binks in 2. David Bowie, the Goblin King, in Labyrinth, to Jar Jar Binks.
I'm trying to think of anybody else who was in Labyrinth.
Well, no, the girl is...
Yeah, Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, and she's in
Jennifer Connelly connects to...
What Beautiful Mind.
She's got to be in something with Liam Neeson or Ewan McGregor.
Well, wait, she was also in Dark City.
I think that's a dead end. That's Kiefer Sutherland and... Rufus Sewell.
Okay, well, wait. And so, wait, what are we trying to get to again?
The Goblin King to Jar Jar Binks in 2. 2 moves.
2 moves?
Now, what does that mean? That means...
Not counting the outside, the ones you mentioned.
No, just 2. So
that would be Labyrinth, something, and then...
Yeah. David Bowie in Labyrinth.
Something.
Somebody in Labyrinth to Star Wars.
So there's one more movie we have to find.
Yes.
In any movie R2-D2.
It's got to be Ian McGregor and...
Jar Jar Binks.
I'll give you a hint there. You know, if you think about it, he's a puppeteer. Labyrinth. Puppet.
Oh, Frank Oz.
And...
Yeah, okay.
And who?
Oz.
Oh, Yoda. Right. Both of them. Right.
Yoda.
Right.
There we are. In 2. All right. Here's a hard one. The Goblin King, again.
Okay.
David Bowie. This is a hard one. And then I'm going to post one last one on the internet. The Goblin King to the undead dogs in Resident Evil in 5.
The undead dogs.
No, it starts with the Goblin King. Starts with David Bowie.
Okay. Well, sometimes that to work.
Could we do something with the digital effects?
Well, you end up with the undead dogs. You could probably do it faster.
No, I'm just saying. I mean, yeah. Who did the digital effects of that? Do we know?
Oh, it was were those digital effects, or was it?
It's probably ILM. It's like ILM, ILM, done.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. That doesn't even make sense to me.
All right, this one's long, so you want to hear it?
Yeah.
All right, so Goblin King to Undead Dogs in 5 is David Bowie to Warwick Davis, who is in the Goblin Corps. Warwick Davis, who is Professor Flitwick to Maggie Smith, who is in Harry Potter. Maggie Smith to Gary Oldman in Harry Potter. Gary Oldman to Mia Jovovich in The Fifth Element. Mia Jovovich to the Undead Dogs in Resident Evil.
Why do you have to include Maggie Smith? Couldn't you just cut her out entirely?
Different Harry Potter movies.
Yeah.
But Warwick Davis has been in the same movies with Snape.
Yeah. No, Gary Oldman.
Oh, Gary Oldman. I'm sorry.
Gary Oldman. Yeah.
All right,
Gary.
So what's the one you're posting for the...
And the last one, last but not least, if you think you can figure it out, it's Sydney from Alias to Admiral Adama in 6. Sydney from Alias to Admiral Adama in 6 moves.
Okay.
All right.
Alrighty. I have a geek link before we go. This is to a product. This is an awesome alarm clock. It's the Danger Bomb Alarm Clock. You can see it here. It's an alarm clock that resets itself every morning to a different code, and you disarm it by either cutting the yellow, blue, or red wire. Otherwise, it blows up with this big sounding explosion sound. And
yeah, I want to bring this. You know, oh, look, it's travel sized. How convenient. And I'll be taking that on my next flight.
But isn't that awesome?
That's awesome. Okay, I got 2 links. One I thought was fabulous. It's called MyHeritage.com.
Mm-hmm.
You take any picture of yourself. You load it up to the computer, you scan it in, and that the computer will tell you what your ethnic heritage is and what the celebrity in the world who is closest to your look is. So well, I was like
weird.
I was like this mixed Chinese guy, you know, half American, half Chinese guy who lives in Hong Kong, is a big pop star there. And it was, but it was like he looked, his facial match was 74% to me.
I don't know. I've done that thing. I haven't done the racial heritage one, but the celebrity I got was Vince Vaughn. I'm like, no. Shall we just say no?
Someone said I look like Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So what's your other link?
And the other link is for a new thing, which I thought was fabulous for geeks. It's called Explosives Camp. And it's amazing. It's this new camp that basically they're having...
In America?
In America. Okay. And they're having this new problem with basically they're all these people who are retiring. The baby boomers who are now retiring, and they were our explosives experts in opening up mines, in creating new mines, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And they're now retiring. And so there are basically, I think, 5,000 positions that are now opening up, but there are only 100 kids who are basically in school for this. So they're trying to create this new generation of explosives experts. And they're taking these kids who have these natural predilections for blowing things up. Kids who have brought bombs to school, stuff like that. And they're enrolling them in explosives camp.
To teach them to build bigger bombs.
How to build bigger bombs. So
this is like our arming the Sumis.
That kind of goes back with the gay bomb thing.
Yeah.
That was one of the first bombs they created.
Come on, boys.
You know what we have here? The rarest of all gay subspecies. The hot gay nerd.
I'm going to add 2 links. You can find them on the website as well. We've all played games that we like, like Mortal Kombat, where you get to fight people. This one's the Bible-themed, single-player fighting thing. You can play Eve. You can play Moses. You can play the devil. You can play Jesus. So, they've each got their individual special powers that are themed.
Why would
their
you play finishing move?
Why would you play Jesus? You would win every time.
I remember your favorite video game when you were in the early 80s. It was the very first one we had. Leisure Suit Larry in the Land of the Lounge Lizards.
I loved that game.
He loved it, too.
And, of course, no question that Peter was heterosexual.
They could never get past this one question. They would come in and they'd ask us very casually, Mom, blah, 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 blah. You're playing that damn game again. I'm not telling you that. You're not ready for that level.
Call me when you're 18.
So the other...
By the way, Jesus would keep turning his other cheek and get whooped every time.
But yeah, but then he would just come back right away.
Well, true.
Well, 3 days later.
But one of his special powers is the rain of loaves and fishes.
Okay. I think and I just broke Peter's mom.
He can make a hail of loaves and fishes strike down from the sky on his enemies.
The south, boys, the south. Keep telling yourself this.
So the other link I'm going to put up is there's this new game out from USC, and basically, you know when you have to create redistrict areas?
Yeah.
This game is a redistricting game, and in playing it, it's kind of like a sim game. In playing it, you learn like the ins and outs of redistricting.
That's
why it's important. So it's a very educational game, and it looks pretty cool.
For future politicians out there who want to get their party voted, it's a
learn how to do it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very, very much for coming
Woo-hoo!
In and talking with
You're
us.
Welcome.
Much appreciated.
Yes. Had requests about this show for a long time.
And so. You had great stuff.
I did.
Yeah, it's really,
anything
really
that's really, really bad, you should, like, I know you don't Photoshop it out, but you could fix it,
that's right?
That's right.
We'll fix it. Yeah, fix her.
Maybe you could talk to our parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, listen, they don't always think
censorship.
I'm all that great either, let me tell you.
Well, Anne, I hope you guys have a good Geek Week. I hope we can actually do one sooner than later, since I know it's been
a good
thin for us.
Monday, if we can.
Oh, cool.
Right. Excellent.
All right. Well, have a good Geek Week, everybody.
Have a great Geek Week.
Geek it out.
Geek it out.